Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. I am Dave Etler, and it is my honor, nay, my privilege, to bow to the greatness that are my co-hosts, Aline Sander.
Hello.
Casey McCleary.
Help, I'm trapped in the radio.
Mark.
Bow before me.
Marcus Terrell.
It's Terrell, yeah.
And Amy Young.
Woo woo.
What an honor, guys, really.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. I wanted to start today with a bit of feedback from listener Erin. A robot version of Erin says she's a future student here at CCOM, and she's been ravenously consuming our back catalog.
I hope the
human... But there's a problem.
On iTunes, I only see episodes 44 and above. I listened to all of the ones I could, and now I have this sad hole in my life where the Short Coat Podcast used to be. Waiting for one episode a week is grueling, so can you help me get episodes 1 to 43?
She's not a Game of Thrones fan, is she? She doesn't know
how
to wait.
I think we should take her on as our charity case for the week.
Yeah.
Let's help her.
Erin,
one lonely soul at a time.
This is quite a sad song you picked.
Yeah, we need to help with Erin's sad heart hole. listeners, if you're feeling the same as Erin, don't despair. Just go to theshortcoat.com, and on the left side of the page, you'll see, you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the archives drop-down box, which will bring you to all the episodes going back to August of 2010. I'm warning you, episodes early on are a little different.
I was on the very first episode.
She apparently was. I don't even remember,
I mean, I was really nervous. You were playing, like, you had the cool, like, sound gear that took out all the ums and pauses that I had.
Yeah.
But we interviewed Dr. Fu Berman from Georgetown University. She has a farmed out.
If you say so.
Pharmaceutical.
Oh, right.
Advertising.
That's now I
remember. Campaign, yeah.
Now I remember.
So episode number one.
Sounds like some hard-hitting journalism.
When was that?
That's where we got our start.
2010.
August of 2010.
Whoa.
So yeah, we go way back. Feel free to peruse the archives.
That was my like sophomore year of college, you guys.
Oh, shut up.
Seriously?
God.
I will punch you with my old fist.
Also, if you have a question or feedback about anything that you want to say to us, drop us a line. We're on Facebook, Twitter, theshortcoat.com. Feedback is among the most important things you can offer us, aside from just subscribing, right?
Just tell us what it is.
And love.
We just want to know.
We just want to know. Love's probably the
we
most
will
important.
Delete the post that are like, please stop. Just yeah. Stop recording.
Yes. Yes, that's where we draw the line. Anything else, I will accept. Anyway, thank you for writing in, Erin. I was in the shower today, not to give you...
So that was an actual person that you gave a robot voice?
Oh, yeah. I always do that when they email. Usually.
I'm on the robot advocacy committee for admissions.
That figures.
We just don't have enough robots in medical school right now.
Right. I think there's a conspiracy.
There's a lot of discrimination.
How do you have time, Casey, for all your causes?
I don't. That's the problem.
So, yeah, I was in the shower today. I don't want to, you know...
It's okay. Just tell us what happened.
I don't want to... I don't want to give you too many ideas about what that might be like, but I was in the shower today thinking, and as I was getting work for work today, because I was running late, and I kept thinking of what my coworkers would mumble about behind my back if they noticed. And it occurred to me, though, you know, what people think about me being a few minutes late is a really silly thing to worry about, right? Mm-hmm. But I worry about really silly things.
No, that's legitimate.
Is there a punchline to this story?
The only punchline is I wanted to...
Because right now I'm
just
hearing this like...
No.
There's in my head.
We can play the sad song again.
There's...
We should just keep the sad song going the entire episode.
Yeah, that's my life right now.
It was a dark time.
I was in the shower thinking no one will miss me.
And then I looked at the clock. And it... My heart sunk.
But I was...
5 minutes late.
Oh my God.
What would they think of me?
But what I really...
Would anyone even notice if I'm not there?
I will tell you that when people are late, there is talk. Anyway,
that's because people are petty and have nothing better to worry about.
Well, see, here's the thing. There are people who don't seem to care about stuff like that. You know, like they're just like, whatever. I don't care what you think. And I want to know, what could I accomplish if I didn't give a rat's patoot? And I don't like to use that language.
we can say patoot on here.
You reserve patoot for just very
special
circumstances.
Yeah, but anyway, the point is, how would my life change if I rarely had to think about what others thought? I'm not talking about like a true sociopath level of
unconcernedness. Because we have to accept there's some level that it benefits us as a society and not just like individual humans living.
I'm talking about within normal limits, like.
Well, I mean, I think about how like insecure and self-conscious I was in middle school. I think it probably to kind of just not be engaged at all would be very to the degree that you're asking, it would be very liberating. And then after a month, you'd be like, wait, where'd all my friends go?
Okay, so again,
you can care about what people think, like if you respect them. You know, and you're like, you're a cool person. Like, I want you to like me, and I take your opinion seriously. But like, not taking it seriously, the opinions of people that you don't think really deserve it. Is that the kind of thing that you're saying?
See, I think you could combine, say, being late for work consistently with doing an awesome job.
Right.
Of being late for work.
The doctor that I'm working with right now was like, "Hey, fair warning, I'm gonna be late every day," and I was like, "Yes, I love you."
Oh, I totally want you to name names. We'll talk about that afterwards.
Are you kidding? All doctors are always late for things.
Yeah, but he's straight up about it. He's like, hey, this is the time we'd be good if we could meet. I'm probably going to be a little late. Don't stress about it.
Yeah, but no one can, like, call a doctor.
My PI used to get mad at me, and then he finally just like, okay, well, Amy's just not going to show up till after 10 a.m., and I'm going to stop fighting her.
See, that's a well-managed expectation right there.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good job.
I got him whipped.
Yes. You do have to make.
Which you can say now because he doesn't own you anymore.
Yes.
That is about managing expectations. I mean, you know.
He knew I got the work done, and I'd usually stay in the lab till like midnight, which is not really good for my mental health because you kind of get loopy and the cockroaches start coming out, and you're like,
I wonder how many scientific results have been ruined by cockroaches. But
six.
There's cockroach DNA here. I don't understand.
Well, I think being late every like 5 minutes every day doesn't matter unless you like someone starts slacking in other areas, and then they can use it to build a case against you. Like if you're also being lazy, they'll be like, oh well, Dave is also 5 minutes late every day. Yeah. So then it just kind of works. But I think if you're doing a good job and everything else and you're 5 minutes late, you can, you know, roll with it.
Let's move on from being late.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Pick another. Help me out and pick another domain.
This is a very complicated question, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's also cultural.
What if you were kind of a jerk?
Mm-hmm. Then I'm looking for. And,
but you, I but you accomplished great you things. Like that happens
that's
all the time,
people.
Right?
I'd be glad if you were late. Like
it's a lot of doctors, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's maybe you have to be a jerk to accomplish great things.
No, that's just the excuse they use to be jerks.
You think like this, like Steve Jobs, the universally acknowledged get great things done in business guy, but who is kind of a jerk.
He's one of the great get things done.
Yeah, I mean, those people
guys.
Are better. It's nice to hear about them. And be like, that's...
You don't want to work for
that's
them.
That's awesome.
A lot of what you describe as him being a jerk was in, like, I just read his biography that someone wrote of him. Walter Isaacson, I think, wrote one of them. But most of the time that he was a jerk was in, like, the first half of his life. Hmm. And it actually screwed him over a lot. Like, don't think that just by being a jerk he was... he certainly could get a lot of things done. But ultimately, I think it was his downfall. And he was cast out of Apple. And then when he came back, he had to make a lot of changes and mature a lot to really achieve the next level of success. And had he not done that, he wouldn't be remembered to the extent that he is right now.
Oh, okay.
So he changed quite a bit, became a lot more reasonable. He was still a jerk in some regards, but
yeah, you can never shed the jerk.
That's my fun.
But it's also day. It's hard to like a jerk label isn't necessarily always fair either. Too,
unfortunately,
because it's very context dependent.
There's no jerkometer.
So yeah.
So it's not like you can be like, all right, well, you know, I'm at the 90th percentile, so I can like probably get away with it. Uh-oh, 95, you know.
Yeah. And then they could add being an asshole to the personality index.
Like, right, and then you think about...
An extroverted asshole.
Someone might not necessarily be a jerk, but they might be direct, and they might be honest.
Yes.
And other people are also insecure, and may blow that out of proportion. Yeah. So I think it's a much more complicated issue. And then once this person's blowing it out of control, and you're fighting back at each other, and you're both kind of have gotten more jerky, like... Could you argue that could be justified to an extent? Maybe. I don't know. Well, there's certainly cases where it isn't, but I think we're all flawed beings.
This happens with successful or strong women, too. Being more assertive is much more women, likely to get you labeled a bitch than if you're a man being assertive.
Man, Casey is just rolling out all the curse words today.
Dude, I got this a lot of anger inside right now.
Let it out.
No, you don't want that.
Why do we even care about this all the time?
Oh, hey, swearing's a good example, like of not caring what other people think of you.
What we need to do actually for the show, we need to start using science fiction swear words like Felderkarb.
Like frack?
Frack and Felderkarb.
So, but to get back to what you were saying, I think that it's important to, like, you're talking about if you didn't care about what people thought about you, like, what would you achieve?
Right.
I think if you, like, truly, unequivocally didn't think about what people thought of you, it would actually be a detriment.
Sure.
I think because a lot of what we achieve is dependent on cooperation and working with each other.
Although a lot of sociopaths are very successful because they don't care. Not a lot of
sociopaths.
Yeah,
but they're able to manipulate
it works, and functioning,
like
it works for them. People.
It works for them.
Yes, it can work for them if they can manipulate people and get away with it. But
which
I think that the most important thing is just to find essentially the kind of person that you want to be and that you know fits within the fabric of society. That's an important point.
Yeah.
And then just stop caring. Because if you know that you're like being true to yourself and what you're doing is fine in the grand scheme of things, what matters?
I agree with that. I think as a whole, the majority of medical students and doctors should just stop caring.
Right. But most... but that's an important thing to say, too, because people are always like, oh, yeah, no, it's like, he doesn't care about anything. It's so cool. It's like, well, no, like, he just doesn't care about certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I read a really interesting article in the New York Times not long ago, written by a man with autism who says that transcranial magnetic stimulation essentially changed him such that he could suddenly empathize with what other people were feeling. And this sort of blew my mind because I...
Blew his mind, too.
Yeah, I think
literally.
So.
Literally.
He took part in a study at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in which doctors attempted to change the activity of his brain so that he could better sense the emotions of other people. And it worked like crazy, apparently. In fact, it sort of ruined his life. You know, it scared him to experience vicarious fear, for instance, or
his wife's depression. He mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. It ruined friendships when he realized that people were making fun of him. Mm. You know, because when he didn't understand, he could more readily think that they were friends.
He needs better friends.
Well, that's probably true. It just was amazing to think that this is even possible. He became neurotypical. Mm-hmm. I'm sure not in every way. I don't know. But
what is this technology that they used on him?
So they put you in, basically they put you in an MRI, a very focused sort of MRI,
right? I thought it was similar to what they do, how they treat the severe depression that's non-responsive to pharmaceuticals.
With like electrode stimulation?
Oh, I
thought
it
brain
was.
Stimulation.
No, I think it's I don't think there are electrodes involved. It's it's basically
those two are very related.
Though. MRI focused MRI.
Yeah, I thought this article was very Oliver Sacks-esque.
Yeah, I didn't.
And talking about like you know questioning like if you fix medical problems or neurological problems, are you actually helping the patient?
Yeah,
because you're operating from a place of conformism. Like the reason that there's something wrong with them is because they're just not like everyone else.
Yeah,
I think that's the most interesting part of this. Kind of like whether or not it's a real
right
like, like real medical basis or not. I think it's interesting his experience because I think it speaks to
well, he's older too, though.
Yeah, he's like because in his 50s, I think.
I know that like for parents with kids with severe autism, it can be really challenging or devastating because you feel like you're not emotionally engaged, like your child, you're not emotionally connecting with them sometimes.
But that actually brings up a good point. For whom is it challenging?
The parent, awful, I mean,
maybe it's okay for the kid.
I mean, I think it depends on the kid because there are other kids who really want to be able to interpret people's feelings and facial expressions and like go through these intensive training programs to like slowly break down facial expressions and memorize them.
Well, I mean, in this case, maybe it was the suddenness of that transition. If it seems like it was pretty sudden,
it's like being blind your whole life and then gaining sight and you can't interpret. And like everything is so wildly unfamiliar to you. That's what it sounds like.
It did bring to mind the there could be similar changes for other things like weight loss surgery. Some people who have weight loss surgery experience such a change in their lives that it actually kind of turns into a disaster. I suspect that has a lot to do with the person involved rather than just the weight loss surgery. But or cochlear implants. I think for most people, getting a cochlear implant is a positive thing, but it can in some cases in the deaf community could sort of turn against you, and that might be a problem because there are some in the deaf community who don't believe in cochlear, who don't believe in people getting cochlear implants.
They don't believe that deafness is a pathology.
Yeah,
like there's a culture
which actually has a bit of a closer parallel to autism, because some people who are autistic, feel that just because they're not neurotypical, I suspect that a lot of people who are autistic feel that just because they're not neurotypical doesn't mean that they have a pathology.
Broken. What's this word you keep using?
Neurotypical?
That's a great word.
Yeah, is
like
that
your
like
classic, like if you were to you label someone as healthy from like.
I mean, probably everybody in this room is neurotypical.
We are a lot like...
Well, that's the problem with the definition, is like what truly is neurotypical.
No, I mean,
because there's so much variability just between people.
I can kind of empathize with that because I think of like major, even just like major life events or life changes, even if they're good, they can sometimes be, it can be accompanied by this sense of dysphoria almost. Yeah.
That's actually kind of
like
common.
When they like told me I had a PhD yesterday and now I'm just like, I think I'm gonna stay in bed and I can't believe this happened.
Well, she's got the imposter syndrome, a lot of people
say this, like really successful, like have you guys ever seen the show Chef's Table on Netflix?
No.
It's amazing. Like no, you should watch it, because there's this woman in the first episode of Chef's Table that has these glasses on that look like a second set of glasses attached to the first. It's ridiculous, but that's beside the point. The show focuses on famous chefs and their story. But one of the guys, and I think you might actually hear it from a couple of them, but talks about how when he won this really big prize that all his mentors won, it was an award for a cooking contest for like the Gastronomique Society. I forget, but it's like one of the biggest gastronomical societies. He was talking about how after you have these big achievements, it's good. But like you're saying, there's also a dark side to it, because suddenly you feel pressure that you've been granted, for your example, like a PhD. People now expect you to be able to operate at these high levels and do great things, that it almost puts more pressure on you. And some people find that, like you described it, as dysphoria to be really common.
It's the whole reason why I avoid success.
That sounds healthy.
Yeah, yes. Here you are chipping away at the podcast.
I am like very comfortable in my mediocrity.
I think I
could exert myself and become incredibly famous and incredibly successful.
That male modeling career.
He could
start
getting here 5 minutes earlier. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No, that will never happen. Oh, well.
That kind of happens to, like, I don't know, like a child actor, you know, if you're in the biggest movie of your life is the first thing that you do.
It's all downhill.
It's kind of all downhill from there, and like
peaking.
Or
peaking
or
early.
If you're an author and you make this best-selling book and like now you're supposed to make more best-selling books, like
I would hate that.
Right. It puts a lot of pressure on you.
Like it's wonderful, but it's also like it's really stressful.
Well, as we wait to see if the DEA will reclassify marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 2 drug, which has been in the news lately.
Really?
They are considering this. Schedule 1, I guess, being drugs that have no medical value and are awful.
Mm-hmm. Should be like a
Schedule 2
as
being
in, as it
should
in cocaine be like a schedule is not a Schedule 1 drug because it does have some medical use,
right?
Despite its danger, despite and its potential.
Yeah, Schedule 2 drugs also dangerous but have medical potential medical uses.
I would like to note that these drug schedules don't have any basis in scientific reality.
No, they're largely law enforcement and political
and
entities.
Yeah, they're
just
products
political.
Of the war on drugs.
And actually a long history of racism as drugs became illegal as various minorities used them.
Well, as
were driven to use them
or
by
were driven to use them.
Some forces.
Well, it is like a legal classification. Like if you have these and it's a Schedule 1 drug, you'll get in more trouble than if it was like a Schedule 4 or something.
Sure. But as we wait to see if they will reclassify weed, Whoopi Goldberg is using her name to promote pop-based edibles and bath products aimed at taming menstrual cramps and discomfort.
Huh. Money, 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 money.
Oh,
yeah, no,
no
kidding.
Well, Whoopi uses weed apparently to treat her glaucoma headaches, and she has says she has relatives.
I've heard that before, yeah.
She says she has relatives who get severe menstrual cramps. So she's working with another person whose name is Maya. I don't know. I didn't take note of her last name because
like
I really don't think
Maya?
It's that important. No, I don't.
It's just Maya, actually.
It's just Maya. Oh, she's...
No, her last name is also Maya.
Maya.
Her first name is
well,
Maya. Her
well, Whoopi
last
Goldberg.
Is it Mia or Maya?
Whoopi Goldberg and Mia are working on products that will be available this month in California only for now that contain marijuana. There's no evidence, of course, that they work.
What about Colorado?
Not yet. Oddly. Oddly, I guess Californians are the only people who can soak their hoo-has in THC.
Oh no, I don't want to soak in it.
What?
Well,
no.
There,
what? No.
In fact, the first one of the
let
products,
alone my hoo-ha.
Not the hoo-ha.
One of the products is called Soak, and it's a medical cannabis lavender bath soak.
Oh no.
Oh God.
It sounds like you guys have tried this and you're really against it.
You might never leave
cannabis back soap.
You might
no,
never
I have
leave
not.
The bathtub.
Like what
That's
if
all
the
I'm saying.
Like what if the kid wants to like take a bubble bath that you know is like a kiddo.
No. You know, I have a feeling that if you're
and they use the
if
wrong
you're
bath
rich
soap.
Enough if you
probably keep it on another shelf.
Yeah, if you're rich enough to be buying Whoopi and Maya Mia Maya Mia's products,
Mama Mia.
Then your kid probably has a nanny.
Your kid has a nanny. They probably
your kid is not going unsupervised. They're not a latchkey kid.
Your kid has a whole separate. Your kid has a whole separate house. There's also a rub, which is a topical salve. Savor, which is two edibles, one featuring THC only, and another with lots of THC and CBD,
cannabinoid.
Cannabinoid. Okay, fine.
What's
and there's tincture.
Cannabidiol.
Something or other.
Something.
It's got
dye
a long.
I forget what it is.
If I had written it out, I would.
Cannabidiol?
I'm sure. If I had written it out, I would mispronounce it anyway. and tincture, a 1 ounce bottle with 3.3 milligram droppers worth of.
Why do you have to get fancy? Like it's pot.
Right.
Well, this seems
on.
Like completely
I like your
excessive.
Attitude.
Social media's Dr. Jen Gunter. Has some grave concerns about these things. She's a board-certified OB-GYN, has two board certifications in pain medicine, and so she wrote about this. The rub, apparently, if it does any better than placebo, has potential for pretty erratic absorption, in part because THC savor, it separates. And I think the last thing you want in your medication is separation. Because then you can get inconsistent dosing, right?
Mm.
Separation?
Like you have to shake the
like
bottle
as in peanut butter
it.
Or something,
oh.
You know, like.
Oh, so just
so it sounds
shake
like a
before you.
A bad product.
Yeah. has a pretty high dose of THC for
like
a beginner
if my
user.
My peanut butter separated spontaneously into peanuts and butter.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can still market that as peanut butter.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't think the buds just pop
just,
out of
I'm
it.
I'm joking. I'm using it as an example.
THC savor has a very high dosage of THC, especially for a beginner user. The tincture is all THC, and if you decide to drink it all, which it's only an ounce, it wouldn't be that hard to like throw it back. You'd pretty much get to enjoy some psychosis. Seems
that
like.
Can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
Is it, so here's what I always wonder about that.
You can't die.
Never having.
No, but people do
there
stupid
have been
shit.
You can do stupid
in Denver,
things.
In Denver, so a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid. I guess he was 18. Mm-hmm. Is that the late age for pot in Denver, probably. In Colorado?
I don't know.
Anyway, he consumed a bunch of edibles, and they don't hit you for a while because they're in your blood system.
So you don't really know how much you've taken.
He went into psychosis, and he jumped off the balcony. This is a hotel balcony and died. Yeah.
So here's my question about this.
That's a real concern.
It can be problematic.
Yeah. Here's my question from somebody who knows nothing. Is psychosis permanent?
No,
or is
no,
it,
no,
is
no,
it
no,
just
no, no.
Does it go away?
Yeah, it goes away.
I mean, you can't overdose on pot as far as we know, but you can do really
life-endangering
things if you...
Like alcohol.
Well, but alcohol can kill you.
It will kill you.
Yes, so alcohol is technically worse, I would say.
Yep.
So one of my graduate from Iowa Carver College of Medicine actually is an internal medicine resident in Denver, and he said that if a patient comes into the ER... with just irretractable nausea and they want to just sit in the shower and have the shower, like the water hitting them, then they know that they've overdosed on pot.
Oh.
Because, like, I guess the one thing that makes their nausea go away is having, like, a water from the shower, like, hitting you. I don't know. That's
I'll
just what
to...
he said. That's...
You can get, like, a cyclic vomiting syndrome is what it's called, that's, like, associated with chronic... extreme marijuana overuse.
Look at this interesting new medical knowledge we're gaining. It's actually kind of cool.
It's pretty interesting. So, you know, like I'm all for legalization and
whatever.
Stuff, but like you
I
gotta
think it'd be great
smart.
For the economy.
You gotta be smart
right.
when
the
you're
thing
using
is, it's still
any
a drug. It's
the dean doesn't listen to this.
It's not
episode.
A schedule.
No, I don't care. I'll tell the dean that I'm pro legalization.
I don't
care.
I think it's fine.
It's not like we're in here smoking a joint.
Exactly.
Oh.
I have perfectly
Oh, was I not supposed to bring this?
Sorry. Hey, wait, pass it around now.
That's exactly what someone in here smoking a joint would say.
Dr. Gunter suggests Whoopi Funs.
Is it Gunter?
I don't know.
Gunter.
Dr. Gunter. Let's call her by, yes, let's call her by her true name.
Dr.
Jen Gunter.
Yeah, sehr gut.
Suggests Whoopi Fund research instead of products.
She's not Russian. I think she's German.
I think that was both German and Russian, Dave.
Let's
that was
all
a lot of American
Dave's
pretending.
Accent.
I would just like to say that there was a German like medical exchange student, and my first impression was him being able to open a beer bottle with literally anything. He opened a beer bottle with a 2 liter of Coke.
I know. I think I met him, and I got to tell him
my
two
cool,
German
right?
phrases I know.
Which are?
Well, one of them is... mein Lieblingsfarbe ist grün, which is
my
favorite color
is green.
Good.
It's useful.
And the other one's less appropriate.
my favorite German expression is meine Brustwarzen explodieren mit Vergnügen.
Wow.
Ich habe mich nicht vergessen.
Ja?
Well, sure.
No.
Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch.
Oh, you speak a little Deutsch?
Nein, spreche
a little Deutsch.
Ein bisschen.
What did I say then? Meine Brustwarzen explodieren mit Vergnügen.
Something exploded
this
afternoon.
You're
exploded
with a fig, like a fig Newton.
Something exploded this afternoon.
Sehr gut.
I'll let my listeners
look. Oh, come on.
Call in if you know what's going on.
Well,
or
okay,
want to make
German
up an
listeners,
idea.
We need you.
This is a medical themed podcast. I think I can say the word breast warts.
Oh.
It's actually nipples.
Why did they not teach me that word?
Yeah, Brustwarzen apparently literally means breast warts, but it's nipples.
How beautiful.
If you could see the look on my face. German is the language of love.
I don't know.
Hey, we, like I've said before.
I can say that in French too, but.
We are strong advocates of women's health.
Yes.
At the Short Coat.
That's right. It's important that we talk openly about breast warts.
Nipples.
I can't.
So anyway.
Just please stop.
Where
just
were
don't.
We, Dave?
Just, I just hope Whoopi Goldberg doesn't get the idea of like treating breast warts with her marijuana tinctures.
I hope
we haven't planted that idea.
Two drops on each nipple a day.
I hope Whoopi Goldberg does not start treating nipples with her marijuana lotion. Just to sum up what we've discussed here.
I think that sums it up nicely.
Although if they were recruiting for a clinical trial, I might just sign up.
I only want one. I'm really big into asymmetry.
Yeah, no, they that's how you do like a within subjects design. You just do one side.
Yep, that's true.
Oh.
Wait, what?
That would give like Pasty Tuesday a totally different meaning.
What is?
It would give a lot of things.
When did we start
meaning?
Having a Pasty Tuesday?
Oh, like it. That was like a. I guess it's not a thing here.
no, it's not a thing here.
It came was in the news. news a few years ago that was
Oklahoma
like
thing?
No, it was in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's such a
he's like drive through coffee shops who had pasty Tuesdays where the baristas women would just wear these pasties. And
oh,
coffee.
So the Pacific Northwest has a big
now.
Bikini barista
GTFO.
Thing.
What? Get the L?
At a yeah. coffee
no.
shop?
Yeah,
it
no,
was like
these,
a drive-through coffee shop. They're really big in Portland.
Shacks,
and so like people started bringing clothes to the coffee shop to tell the women to put clothes on, and they just donated them to a local shelter. It made national news. I'm
I
not
like,
making this up.
You know
up.
What? Those are clearly...
No, I believe you.
Those
believe
coffee
you.
Shops are clearly marked. Like, this is very obviously a bikini barista station. You don't need to be an asshole and bring them clothes. If you don't want to see it, go to a different coffee shop.
I... Mm.
That's my opinion.
Did I just blow your mind, Dave, with that story?
I'm just
you
trying
need to move to Portland.
Northwest.
I'm just trying
cool.
not, I'm just
it's
trying
so
not
cool.
to like that idea so much.
I hope your wife doesn't listen.
She's fine.
Good.
She'd
good,
probably,
for, good for her. She should be fine. We're
probably,
humans.
She'd probably like it too.
She'd be like,
oh my God, I love
Dave,
your
it's
wife.
It's Tuesday.
I love
Let's
your
go
wife.
Get some coffee.
So much, Dave.
I hope.
Or edit that one out.
No. That one's staying.
Corey, the intern, yeah, yeah. is getting busy.
Corey's writing a book over here on the show notes.
Like, dance,
delete
Corey,
that,
dance.
Delete this.
The here's a just let's change the subject before
okay,
I.
I'm sorry. Enforce... I didn't entirely start that.
No, you
I just
didn't.
Wanna okay.
Interesting. Two related studies from the University of Virginia attempt to get at why black patients get less effective pain treatment than white patients.
Very... It's called racism. It's
yeah.
Because...
But why?
Oh,
but what is it? What I think the
I
goal
the,
was...
I mean, I read the article, so I don't know if you want to get
well,
the opinion of someone else.
No, I want only my own opinions are valid on this show.
Well, there's a misbelief, right, that pain tolerance is different between like races, which is incorrect.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you'd think
but
somebody
think
trained in healthcare would know that... That that's not
that being black doesn't make you
physiologically
pain
or biologically the case.
Right.
So yeah, well, just to recap for those of you who haven't read the study like we have or read the article like we have, the first study looked at inaccurate beliefs that lay people had about. There were two related studies. The first looked at inaccurate beliefs that lay people had about the differences between the physiology and biology of white people versus that of black people. For example, black people feel less pain and their blood coagulates faster. Than
I like
white
the,
people's.
Is, oh. Have you ever heard this, that redheads feel less pain?
I mean, we could test
I
it.
I heard that they were more acutely sensitive.
I heard,
or it might be the opposite, but I think that there is a link between red
I mean,
hair and pain.
Yeah,
and I think it's actually scientifically established.
I heard that like if a redhead, like during a cesarean section,
yes.
they
yeah.
have a hard time getting, like knocking you out
yeah.
with anesthesia.
I heard the same thing.
But
well,
but I will say
I
in the study
spawn.
That they conducted, they did intersperse... true like
right.
epidemiological data that has been demonstrated to vary between races, like the risk of heart disease, stroke, and some other
right.
things.
A lot of that stuff, though, mm. is so. I mean, since black people are disproportionately represented like within impoverished communities, how much is that is an effect of poverty?
I was
going
to say
well,
how much of it
race?
I mean, biological.
So black women will have. They're more likely, if they do get breast cancer, to have a more severe, like triple negative breast cancers. So, I mean, there are some genetic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
so, but I mean, I'm just saying that in the study, they
like
did incorporate.
Sickle cell is a disease that's more.
Yeah,
common
they did.
African
so they did incorporate some genuine health disparities.
Or
they,
differences.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did you describe who the participants are?
Okay, so the first group, their first study, was among lay people.
Okay.
Lay people who had more inaccurate ideas about the physiological and biological differences between white people and black people rated a black patient's pain as being lower than an identical white patient's pain.
Okay.
And the second study made the same comparison except with medical students, people with medical training, so medical students and residents.
So is this
and many of them also had the same inaccurate beliefs about the biological differences between blacks and whites. And the number of inaccurate beliefs also affect negatively the accuracy of pain perception when they considered a black patient versus a white patient. Did I do that right?
I think
yeah, that
did.
Was my impression.
I was
I
just
mean,
wondering when
sad.
They say many, do you have actual numbers? Like, is this a majority?
Yeah.
Is this like
what no?
Is
they
this?
Broke
I mean,
it
many
down.
Is very.
They broke down into
subjective.
Percentages.
There were percentages. Like some. I don't remember the exact percentage. It was like
nice
a three
thing,
quarters.
The one thing I was kind of thankful for is that they they divided it like first year residents, second year residents, third year residents. And as you progress in residency, your degree of racism did decline.
That's nice. That is good.
So more training, less racism. That's good.
I mean, I think you just re-experience. You realize, but it's sad because like they were saying, like even little kiddos that have like appendicitis or something, like
they get less pain.
Well, they're more likely to get like ibuprofen or acetaminophen versus an opioid. That it's just.
And is this because of the patient requesting less pain medication?
It could partly be an advocacy, like a self-advocacy thing, but I think a lot of it is like...
Because this might not be like a biological difference, but it could be that black patients tend to request less pain medication, couldn't it?
What was looked at here was the subject's perception of how in pain a patient was.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So... Mm. Not addressed.
What was this published in, the study? What journal, do you know?
PNAS.
Oh, okay.
If I recall correctly.
It's a pretty reputable journal.
I'll put a link in the description. It's interesting to read about, but it's also clear that I need to take a class on interpreting research because you researchers write in such an obtuse way. I know that it's all about being...
They write for other researchers.
I know it's all about being very accurate and very... And so that lends itself to many clauses and commas.
Oh, but it's so arcane.
And just, you know, ridiculous sentence constructions that would not survive in the real world. But what would be great is if at the end of each section, there was a summary for idiots. Like me.
Well, okay, then every summary would be like, you know, this really is not helpful to anyone or anything.
Dave, this is...
So, like, don't even bother.
Why are you even reading this, gosh?
No, Dave, this is
something I can't believe
I
just wasted the last 2 years of my life.
I just wanted to get published.
No, well, there's a very real problem that we're learning... we're learning a lot of great things about science, and it's getting so complicated that there's a growing disconnect between the public perception and like a trained scientist perception of what, how to actually interpret scientific information and what can actually be. So we have all these scientific papers that are meant only for scientists that someone without scientific training, and even some people with scientific training, cannot interpret correctly.
Yeah, and here's the thing. A lot of this stuff gets reported in the media.
Well, that's what I was about to say. And then the media then misinterprets it, and then people read the media, and that causes all these problems. Like,
right? Wouldn't it be better if the scientists themselves interpreted it for lay people?
Yeah, I mean,
right.
There is you can build a great career.
This is something like the like if you have a solution would be huge, because currently there is no like intermediate.
Well, I mean, you can totally build a career.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is trying to. He's people great. Like that.
It's science communication. Writing.
Hang on, I want to hear what Amy has to say.
Yeah, I mean, you can build a career out of science communication.
There is a career. It's called science writing. You're right.
Yeah, and translating, you know, findings and.
But they're still all a media outlet. So it's all the sensationalist headlines. Right.
I still think that every author. Or set of authors, or whatever you want to talk about. Every paper should have like a summary at the end. I don't care where you do it. Summary at the end that basically lays it out for. I know it's ridiculous.
This is a ridiculous idea.
Well, it's not ridiculous.
Some articles
but
will
it's. You know, the thing is, but the abstracts are actually still very complicated. Mm-hmm. And I think it seems like a good idea.
That's
the thing is that people aren't, scientists aren't writing, they're not publishing in PNAS, like for non-scientists to read it.
Yeah.
That's not the goal of their work.
Man, maybe they should be.
If you really want to get it, just jump to the discussion.
But then you have to think about incentives. And what a scientist is trying to do is like obviously do their science, but almost more importantly is secure funding.
Yeah.
And you're not the one that's in charge of their funding. So there's not an incentive for them to
put
to
me in charge of their funding. We'll see how science changes.
Maybe it should change. I don't know.
It's all about pot research now. There was a really great...
Dave doesn't care what anyone thinks of him.
Dave's ready to move to Canada.
Well, if the funding is that bad, we might all open GoFundMe accounts.
There you go.
For our labs, so...
Indiegogo campaign.
That's...
Hey, congratulations, University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, for implementing a so-called quiet initiative.
Nice.
In which from 12:30 to 2 p.m., lights will be dimmed, patient stimuli will be reduced.
Wait, for an hour and a half in the middle of the day?
That's fantastic.
Amy apparently doesn't believe
it. Have you ever done a hospital stay?
In quiet time.
They wake you up to do labs at 4 a.m. Like, that's what needs to be changed.
I know. This is what I was going to say. It's like, wow, what a revolutionary concept. And this has been covered, like, all over the country, this idea. I think it's great. I think some quiet time in the hospital would be wonderful. For patients, I would like to advocate for maybe
10 p.m. to 7 a.m. is what it should.
Yeah, hospitals are like the worst places to get any rest. I mean, Has any of you ever stayed in a hospital for a long period of time?
Yes.
Yes. So what you learn is that you will not get any sleep because your friggin' IV will bleep in the middle of the night and wake you up. Which and it's not like a quiet bleep. It's like,
yeah.
Because that's probably, I mean, good sleep has to be huge to the healing recover, process right? in general.
Honestly, yeah. Literally every patient I talk to on my clerkship, when I ask them, you know, oh, good morning, how's it going? The first thing it says, somebody woke me up this morning yeah. and like woke me up in the middle of the night last night. I mean, they have to do their jobs, but.
I remember when my wife was in the hospital after, I think it was our first child was born. It was at the time when there was the JCO visits, I don't know what they're doing, but they come and it's something with research certification.
The Joint Commission?
Joint Commission on something or other. Anyway, it was like a big deal. And so they were coming in all the time to check things like the refrigerator. And, you know, it's like, could you, you know, buy?
Get out.
Anyway. Why not do this all the time, though?
I mean, why
not do this all the time? Why not? How about quiet conversation at all times? Do we need to be...
Well, and I think the new hospital, well, new as of
a couple weeks.
Years ago when I was interviewing, but the Cleveland Clinic Hospital, they're all individual patient rooms. There's no joint patient rooms to encourage, you know,
yeah, that's resting. A huge, that's, like, inadvertent HIPAA
and that
violation.
That what?
To have...
Oh, two people
in the room. Well, it's not a violation. Policy accommodates for it, right. Yeah.
But still, talking to a patient about whatever is going on with them when the only thing that separates two patients is a curtain.
Yes. But I do want it. I mean, really, the equipment alarms, come on. With the equipment
alarms.
Yeah,
they go off.
Well, I mean,
it
might help save your life if depending on what.
That's assuming people are paying any attention to them. But while I'm lying there at 4 o'clock in the morning and my IV is going off and.
There are so many.
They're attending to other things, and they know what it is.
And a lot of times,
the IV's done.
They come in and just turn
the IV.
They come in and just turn it off, yeah, or silence it.
I mean, do we not live in the 21st century when maybe that alarm could be heard? I don't know, at the nurse's station, elsewhere.
Yeah,
our so-called silent alarm.
It doesn't need to be waking the patient up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The nurse could quietly come in. If it wasn't for the alarm, the nurse could come in and turn it off and then leave.
Well, you used to be able to mute it yourself, but now you have to scan your badge before you can make any changes
to
it.
Oh,
all right.
The older ones, I'll mute them.
Well, just like that, we've reached the end of a show. Thanks so much for listening and hanging out with us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes or not, and give us a review. The reviews there help us grow the show, make us feel good, all that good stuff. As always, we're listening all over the place. Send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. The show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. And I do believe we've found Corey's replacement, assuming he doesn't break my heart. We could definitely support another intern, though, so if you're looking for an opportunity, hit me up. Our opening music is by Dr. Box, and our closing music is by Agrifox. Talk to you in a week.